You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, tune into the Cleveland Browns preview show with host Ken Carmen and Gerard Sherry tonight at 7 p.m. right here on ESPN 850 and 92.3 The Fan. You can catch that. And then tomorrow night, it'll be myself and Ken Carmen for the Mike Pettine Show, also on ESPN 850 and 92.3 The Fan at 7 p.m. So get the radio. We're getting into the full mid-season.
I'll be tuned in.
You'll be tuned in, of course. And right now, we have the pleasure of being able to speak with you directly live here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Couple of NFL stories coming out right now. Number one, Steve Smith announcing today that he will retire at the end of this year. This will be his last season in the NFL. He's under contract through the 2016 season, so he's going to leave about $3 million on the table, but he is going to retire at the end of this year. He's already got 8 1,000-yard seasons under his belt.
That's no surprise, and I think for him, he wants to go out on top. His play last year with the Baltimore Ravens, I'm sure, surprised a lot of people that he had that much left in the tank. He wants to leave on a high note, and as many people have said in the preseason rankings thus far, the Baltimore Ravens most likely are definitely inside the top 10. Some even have them in the top 5 in the National Football League, and a lot of that has to do with the passing game, and Steve Smith is a huge portion of that for Joe Flacco, as well as Breshad Perriman, who's been struggling with injuries throughout training camp. But what a great player, and I think for him, not only going out on top, but he played wide receiver at such a physical level. When you think of Steve Smith, you think of Hines Ward, you think of Anquan Boldin. They're big, physical, possession-type receivers. They go to bat for their running backs. They're blocking down the field, and all that has to wear on you. And what a great career he's had. And for a lot, as I mentioned, a lot of people are surprised he's been doing it that well at his fresh start there in Baltimore.
Listen, he is the best, biggest, quote, little receiver in the history of the NFL, is how I would say it. When you look at what Steve Smith has accomplished in this league at his size, he plays like a big 6'5" physical receiver, even though he only stands 5'9". Just an incredible career for Steve Smith. And listen, if you're a Browns fan, they've lost Torrey Smith this year. They replaced with Breshad Perriman. Steve Smith will be gone next year, so the top two wide receivers from that team will both be gone over a two-year period. And we've already heard Breshad Perriman very much mixed reviews in the early going with the Baltimore Ravens. The other big story, speaking of fighting teammates, which is also something Steve Smith was known for, Cam Newton getting into a fracas in Carolina at their practice today, taking on cornerback Josh Norman and giving him the business, pretty much, it appeared, and enjoying it. He was smiling and laughing in all the pictures that I saw while he was taking on his corner. Should quarterbacks be getting into fights like that?
No, especially not when a franchise gives a young man $100 million. And as I read the Pro Football Talk article about this fight, I guess Cam Newton threw an interception to Josh Norman. Josh Norman was then running it back. And as all quarterbacks do, they run over and tag off on a guy or, try to poke the ball out just to let them know that, hey, you're not running this back for a touchdown, and I would have gave you my best attempt to tackle you, which I believe Cam Newton could. And Josh Norman threw a mean stiff arm right in the face of Cam Newton, which I'm sure was not received in the best way, and it became shoving. Shoving became maybe throwing blows, but then they eventually ended up on the ground.
Yeah.
And I don't believe it's good. It's not a good look for the Carolina Panthers, not a good look for Cam Newton, and just a scary moment for Ron Rivera and the entire franchise, Carolina Panther franchise, as you just gave this gentleman $100 million, probably 40 some of it guaranteed, who's the face of your franchise on the ground, potentially, injured over a silly fight.
A brawl. Yes, it's hard to imagine that happening here with your quarterback. I mean, we know that's not going to happen, but yeah, definitely something that catches the eye right now, I would say, when you're looking at the big storylines this year. Another one that I got a kick out of right now, Patriots cut Matt Flynn today. He's got a hamstring injury. He's never healed. They brought in Ryan Lindley, who had played for the Arizona Cardinals, among other teams, to bring in. And when asked what his biggest asset was, Bill Belichick, or his biggest skill, said Ryan Lindley was his health. Well, Belichick being honest.
He needs bodies.
He needs bodies.
We need bodies.
Not a quarterback right now, but yes,
no,
we're starting to get
correct.
There. It is.
And it's just unfortunate. Matt Flynn's made a lot of money in the National Football League without doing much of substance since that, 500-yard, five touchdown game against the Detroit Lions that meant absolutely nothing for a team that had already locked up home field advantage.
A lot of money.
$30 million?
A lot of money.
A lot of money.
a lot of
money. And I think at this point right now, if he can't get healthy, he's a guy that could be, you know, outside looking in from the on a National Football League level.
Yeah, listen, he went and he got beat out quickly in Seattle.
Charlie Whitehurst played over him.
Then he went down to Oakland and was quickly
by
beat
Terrell
out.
Pryor.
Matt Flynn is not long for. I don't understand why. It's amazing that he's like a left-handed relief.
He's a system guy.
Lasts forever and ever.
He's a system guy.
Yes, he is. All right, speaking of system, the Browns got the Orange Brown scrimmage out of their system last Friday night down at the Shoe in Columbus. Great atmosphere, great performance by the offense overall. What did you think about that scrimmage? And we want to ask you that as well. 216-578-0850. Your thoughts on what the Cleveland Browns were able to do down at the Orange and Brown scrimmage, because I thought it was a nice performance by the offense, particularly the two quarterbacks, Josh McCown and Johnny Manziel.
I thought it was a nice, a solid performance by the offense. I thought it was a very cool setting for the Cleveland Browns as a franchise for them to showcase the players on the field, the new branding, the new culture, Mike Pettine, all the things that this franchise, you know, is and should be proud of moving forward. Very surreal for me. You know, I'm usually down there and you see boatloads of scarlet and gray, but brown and orange flooded the streets, flooded Dog Pound Drive, and of course the Horseshoe to turn out in force to see this football team in. And it was just great. I enjoyed watching the one-on-ones, you know, the kind of like before the actual scrimmage started, but seeing the guys compete, it's always special under the lights. And to me as a player, and I know for those guys out on the football field, it was always just a little bit more special. You could practice down the street from Berea and it'll just feel a little bit different. So to go 2 hours away, under the lights, close to 50,000 people there to watch it. Guys wanted to show out. And that's the competitors that make up this roster. That's why, as I've mentioned, not only these four preseason games, but that scrimmage and the practices against the Bills will only help grow and mold this team into what it's actually going to be come early September.
And you certainly look forward to the practices against the Bills. That'll be next week around this time. They'll be kicking out. They'll be having their first practice with the Bills before they play them that Thursday for the second preseason game here at the First Energy Stadium. So what I came away from it was that Josh McCown continues to look very, very good. The rollout showed the athleticism, finding Hartline. He made a nice diving catch on a perfectly thrown ball that was either going to be a touchdown or an incomplete down in the red zone, which is what you want. He had the nice play to Gary Barnes on the third down. He really, really stood out to me, as he continues to do, as the leader of this offense and a guy that you can tell the team has confidence in right now.
Absolutely, and I love it. And not only the coaches and John DeFilippo to open up that playbook as wide as he needs to be efficient, but I love that the trust that's being developed between player to player. That is what I love, and that is in some cases, from my knowledge, as I go back to last season and you continue to, you know, think of the Cleveland Browns, it's they were a team on the field, but they weren't a team in the locker room sometimes. And I think that this team, as you mentioned, you could never imagine, you know, Josh McCown and Joe Hayden fighting or squabbling on it. No. There's so much appreciation and love and, fighting and being a detriment towards the growth of this team is the last thing on their minds. Every day, all they want to do is go out and get better. And you see that exuded in Josh McCown's preparation, the way he owns the huddle, and when he has that ball in his hands. He wants to make a play. He wants to be positive for the Cleveland Football Browns.
And that is a very good thing. We're going to go to the phone lines now, 216-578-0850. Bring in my man, Dave from BCC. Dave, what's going on?
Hey, Big Nate, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Great show, guys.
Thank you, man.
Good to see you, too. Listen, I wanted to just touch on the defensive side of the ball. I'm kind of really excited about the defense, especially on the back end.
Yep.
With all the competition. I noticed you guys were talking about Pierre Desir a couple days ago, and I kept my eye on him even for the couple times that he got in last year. He looked very impressive. I just wanted to get you guys' take on the competition on the back end of the defense and how he's looking this year.
Floor is all yours, sir.
Pierre is my guy. Right now, he's got a hamstring injury that he came up with just before the Orange and Brown, but it is a minor injury. He's expected to be back soon. He's ahead of Justin Gilbert on the depth chart right now. I think he's played very well. I think he has everything it takes to be a good 1A or number two corner in this league. He has been, according to the coaches, the most improved player on the team since the midpoint of last season. So Pierre's looked good. Justin Gilbert is showing signs. Had a nice play at the orange and brown scrimmage, not going away from Hartline. Had a nice interception in practice today. So that's coming along. I think when you look at the corners, you know, Hayden, Tremont Williams, Gilbert, Dazier, Kaywan Williams are all locks. Who else makes it comes down to Johnson Batamosi. Is he a specialist? And then I think Charles Gaines and Robert Nelson are really going to be battling for that last corner spot if they do keep him. Both of those guys also have practice squad eligibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree, and you and I continually agree on that point. And just something that I continue to kind of think about as you know, frustration looms from local analysts in regards to, you know, players with hamstrings or calf strains, you know, not making out to practice. And I'm not blaming anybody. And I'm just saying, I wonder if, because, you know, today's football, and a lot like you when it comes to fantasy, it's all analytics and numbers and data and, you know, analyzation to how you maximize performance and so on and so forth. I just wonder that if there's anyone outside looking in at spring training or spring development that looks into why we have so many hamstring injuries or these little light strains that are happening.
Let me ask you this, though, and I don't know if you saw this evolution while you were going through your time in the league or if this is something that has been, you know, and continues to evolve, but strength training, conditioning, the ability to get the absolute maximum out of your body, I think, is at an all-time high because of the science behind it. And like anything, when you are being pushed to your limits, you know, quick twitch muscles, et cetera, explosion, I think you're more prone to break down because you are right next to redlining. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to be at your peak. And I think that I wonder if these guys are almost in too good of shape. They are too lean. There's too much muscle. There's too much maximization of their physical gifts that it doesn't take much to get a little bit tight here,
sure,
or a little bit of a pop there.
That could definitely be the case. And something that actually started to happen towards the you know, the last, say, 2 or 3 years of my career, my last year in San Diego, then, of course, in San Francisco and in Green Bay, what we started to do, because the knee injury became so prevalent. You know, it was like, you know, multiple players per camp popping ACLs, MCLs, PCLs, or Achilles. That what we started to do, and again, it's a good conversation piece, but we started to protect, you know, the joints and strengthen everything around it. That sometimes you take the emphasis off, you know, the larger muscle group. So, and again, it's overanalyzation on my behalf, but it just, to me, it's to have three of good solid football players, you know, explosive players, all have hamstring injuries. It's, to me, a little bit of a coincidence, and I just wanted to, you know, throw it out there to see if there's any direct reflection on, you know, on why.
It's interesting, and this is a team that's been very successful with hamstring injuries, by the way. Last year in all of camp, 4 hamstring injuries for the entirety of training camp. We seem to have that almost on a daily basis this year. So it is, there is something in the water there. Update, Joe Thomas left practice with a leg issue as Danny Shelton rolled up on him. The early word, though, is that it is not serious. So certainly good news on that front there. Brian Hartline appeared to be fine after injuring his ankle, it looked like, on the final play. Kind of got caught up weird under Tremont Williams on the sideline. Shook it off, walked it off. And by the time he walked off the practice field, he was jogging without any noticeable limp of any kind. So I feel like if there was something there, it probably would have manifested itself there. Going back to the orange and brown scrimmage, we saw E.J. Bibbs, who was our guest earlier in the show, nice touchdown. Josh Len stood out. Good chemistry with Johnny Manziel, who really seems to be looking like a quarterback. I think that he's a guy who really has calmed down. Things that were huge, huge hurdles for him last year are becoming more second nature, setting protections, calling the play in the huddle, going through his progressions. He looked very, very good. But the one play that stood out to me more than any other was Danny Shelton running from the middle of the field to the sideline and crushing Marlon Moore.
Yeah, it was exceptional. And as I mentioned on the live look-in today, which you can find on ClevelandBrowns.com or the Browns mobile app, we talked about
excellent
that.
Excellent plug.
Well, thank you, sir. That's plugging ourselves, isn't it?
Yes.
I actually, as I mentioned, I always focus on a player or a position group when I watch a certain play. And I don't just focus on the football or the quarterback. And I happened to be watching Danny Shelton on that play. It was a zone blitz that I just referenced that Jim O'Neill has kind of started to open up and do a little bit more, where Danny Shelton is asked to step across the line of scrimmage and not engage, but then back out away from the line, you know, to kind of cover the middle because we're bringing some type of outside pass rush. So we're giving up the middle to get pressure outside, but Danny would be the dropper of all people right there in the middle, the man in the middle. And he just soon there reacts the quick three-step drop, not even three-step, like one-step drop with that speed bubble screen out to the wide receiver, Marlon Moore, and he literally just puts that cleat in the ground and just takes off. And Justin Gilbert has him. He's corralling him like around his waist, around his shoulder pad. And then the ultimate cleanup comes, and Danny Shelton puts 70% into Marlon Moore and 30% into Justin Gilbert and knocks both of them all completely over the 3-yard white line, you know, into the sideline. And I just – and I said, wow, and everyone around me was like, huh, what? You know, I go, dude, look up at the big board at Ohio Stadium and watch that replay.
So you say wow. That play obviously was wow, and I know on the sideline there was a lot of buzz about it. But when you have a guy who's a 12th overall pick that is that girth, that size of a man, and you see him in the orange and brown scrimmage sprinting 30 yards to the sideline to clean up a play like that, what does that do for his credibility in the locker room? What does that do for it? What do teammates think about when they see Danny Shelton make that
play? It's huge. It's huge. And in some cases, guys are jealous that he's showing out at that level too, to the point where you have that conversation with yourself and go, man, I need to crank it up a bit, you know, because and the coaches will call you out or you call yourself out, you know, and we used to call them like a loaf, you know, where you're kind of loafing on the play where I didn't continue to, you know, make it all the way to my pursuit angle or, a loaf in a route, whatever it might be. If I know I'm on the backside, you know, of a route combination where Johnny or Josh are going to go front side, I just loaf in my route. You got to go 100 miles an hour all the time. We saw that in Washington with the tape that we watched pre-draft when we were high on Danny Shelton and we wanted him to see him in the orange and brown. Well, he is living up to the bill. And lastly, what I talked about this morning on the live look-in is I also watched him go against Alex Mack in one-on-one pass rush situations.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's they create a setting that gives Danny kind of a two-way go because there are no guards essentially helping Alex and protecting him or giving him the stab that you sometimes see a guard give help to a center. But what I loved is when Danny would make his move, in some cases he was never completely clean, but he'd always, you know, get that 2-3 yard push on Alex Mack. Once the whistle would blow where he felt like he reached the quarterback level, Danny would immediately, as I just said in pursuing, put his cleats in the ground and run back to his position group. And what that shows is Danny would potentially be rushing a passer. The ball would be thrown instead of him saying, I'm not going to make that play 10, 12 yards down the field. So I'm just going to lollygag or loaf my way back to, you know, where a coach would expect me to be. No, I'm putting my cleats in the ground and I am exploding to the play so that you can separate potentially ball carrier from the ball itself. And that's a force. That's how forced fumbles happen.
And as you pointed out, his hustle never seems to stop. At Car Jair just tweeted us that Shelton was also the first player back into the huddle after that play. And you know what stands out to me about him? It's because I don't know if you remember around the draft time when he ran his 40 time at the combine, which, you know, it wasn't fast. And Bill Polian was saying that no player has ever been productive in the NFL when running a 40 time that slow. And so he says that 5.64 that he ran was a red flag. He went sideline to the sideline incredibly quickly. He does not look slow.
No.
And I know that his 40 time was what his 40 time was. But at the same time, to me, there are plenty of people that I see running on this team that look like they would lose to Danny Shelton in a foot race.
I agree. And that's where the combine serves a purpose, you know, from a standard evaluation standpoint. But as we had Ray Farmer sit right here, and as I always like to put a percentage on something, every scout, every general manager, you know, uses the tools that they're provided differently. And I would just think that if you watch Danny Shelton's film, which should make up a significant portion of how you evaluate him as a player, he plays a heck of a lot faster than his 40 time was in the combine.
Yes.
So
much faster.
And in that case, For Bill Polian, that's a conversation piece based on his experience. But for when it comes to the Cleveland Browns, you take that 40 time on a piece of paper, you crumple it up, and you throw it away, because in the world that we need Danny Shelton to live in, he's as fast as we want him to be.
And he got to that sideline in a hurry, folks. Justin Gilbert was saying yesterday on the Browns huddle, which you can see at clevelandbrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, said, I just saw it out of the corner of my eye, and then at the last second I tried to brace myself, and I was thinking, I was thinking to myself, I'm just glad I wasn't Marlon, which I thought was a very good, very honest insight there from Justin Gilbert. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, breaking down everything that happened day 10 of Browns training camp here in Berea when Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, returns.